Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In a world where Carolina Panthers fans have an insatiable thirst for Panthers news and opinions, only one podcast roars ferociously. It's the C3 Panthers Podcast.
What's the deal, Panther fans? It's your boy, Tony Dunn, a.k.a. The Professor. It's the C3 Panthers Podcast brought to you by CarolinaCatChronicles.com, where I would say every Tuesday night we chop up the latest news. But it's the Wednesday Beat Report, folks. We're trying to link up with a beat writer every week. That's my goal. I got to stick to it. It's going to take some devotion to me to continue to beg and plead and track down people. And tonight, we've done it. I guess this will be, CK, is this our second or third time in a row?
I think it's the third, because we had one for week one and week two. So this will be the third.
Okay. All right. Wow. So we're on a winning streak right now, just like the Carolina Panthers, who are 2-0, folks. And don't let those power ranking fool you. We gonna smoke these brothers tomorrow night. I believe it. We're gonna have the post game show. There's a lot to talk about. I'm here tonight with our special guest, Josh Klein, the Riot Report, the news organization powered by fans. This resonates with us. We've known Zach since the beginning, and just like he knows everybody. So I feel like I used to work at this restaurant. Everybody like, I know Perry. I know Perry. It's like, everybody knows Perry. That's what they say about Zach. But Josh, we've hung out before. It's been a while, man, but you are still pounding. Congratulations on your work at the Riot Report, and thank you for joining the C3 Panthers Podcast.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. So third week in a row, I think you guys had Joe on last week. Who else has done the show?
Oh, we had Jonathan Alexander last week.
Oh, nice. I love Jonathan.
Yeah. So we just try to, and then we try to grab a reporter or someone from the other team, you know, a blogger or a podcaster, and do a preview. As it turns out that Panther fans have, like our intro says, an insatiable thirst to talk about the Carolina Panthers. I tell you, mad people tuned into the show last night. We thank you for your support. People are already in the chat room hanging out. And tomorrow night for the post game, you guys know it will be lit. Cody Lashney is in the house. My co-host, welcome back. I just hung out with you like 8.5 hours ago or something like that.
And it just wasn't enough, was it?
We went long.
It wasn't enough. We needed more of each other's presence, me, you, and CK. And you know what? We needed someone who really knows about this Panther football team to come and tell us what it is, man. That's what these Wednesday night shows are for. I'm happy to be here with you, man.
You guys know more than me, it seems like. I feel like every time I scroll through my Twitter timeline, it seems like C3 is going live with some sort of show. Like, just every time, just constantly, like Monday morning, 10 a.m., it's just like, oh, C3's live. All right, cool, cool. What's going on?
Yeah, we've made a concerted effort this season to try to, you know, go, like, I think Tony could probably, we could all kind of agree, like, the two shows a week was, you know, good, but it wasn't really pushing us over the edge. And you know, there was so much still that was left to talk about. At the end of shows, I mean, our Tuesday nights would go for 5 hours because we just didn't. So, you know, I think we decided to get logical and smart and spread that out over the week and then add some, you know, interesting pieces. But yeah, it is quite frequent now, and I'm not hating it.
Josh, we've been doing this show since 2013. We started in 2013. It's been 9 years. We haven't missed a Tuesday night. And we're not the biggest presence, like the most subscribed, but we have a crazy, insane return rate like our community. We're building a community. That's what we focus on. It's not the numbers of subscribers. But I tell you, when you are trying to push the YouTube analytics, and actually we're not even trying. That's not our goal. Our goal is just to get together and act like we're riding to the game and talking about stuff.
The Panther fans need more, so we just decided to give it to them, man. They asked for it.
And it's fun, man. It's fun. And we could not make the Tuesday night show any longer. We can't have two, three guests when it's already going. It went 3 hours last night. The calls go crazy. So anyway, we'll be here tomorrow night, folks. 252-228-5098. You can be a part of that broadcast after the game when we smoke these fools. But let's go ahead and jump into this. Yes, we brought Josh on to try to figure out. Last night I said this, is should we be worried that we're looking ahead of the Houston Texans? And I said, I am already looking ahead. I'm telling you, I'm like feeling this team right now. I know. But that's me. I'm not playing the game. What's your sense of the Panthers? We see Joe Brady tweet 1-0. We see the story about Matt Rhule, who's messaged and someone said, congratulations, 2-0 or something. He's like 1-0. What's your sense of this team coming off a big time victory after the Saints game on a short week, first road game? Are they ready?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because you're absolutely right. The Matt Rhule mantra has been since he got here is like, we do the same thing every day, every rep, whether it's a 10 a.m. practice in August or whether it's whether we're playing in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. We want to run that same rep the exact same. And he feels like if they do everything correctly every single time, they do it the same way, then that's how you make a consistent winner. And I mean, he's not wrong. It's also it's a little bit of that kind of you're teaching college kids how to play football at like professionals. And I'm not sure that you need to teach professionals to do that every day, but at the same time, if that's what he has been saying this whole time. So I'll be curious to see if I agree with you. I also think they're going to smoke these fools, for lack of a better term. I mean, the Houston Texans are just like this is a team that the Carolina Panthers absolutely should beat. I thought they were going to beat the Saints. I thought they were going to beat the Jets. And you know, you keep hearing all these like cat about the teams they're playing. Oh, it's a rookie quarterback, his first start. Oh, all the coaches are out with COVID. Doesn't matter. Like, why do Thank other you. Teams and sometimes even the national media, they try to mitigate these wins? I mean, I remember 2015, this team was the worst 13-0 team in history. And it's like, what are you guys, what's happening? Like, why is that the constant refrain to just try to bat people down? All they can do, bat teams down. All they can do is play the teams that go up against them on the field. So week one, it was the Jets, and they played bully ball on the Jets. Week two, it was the Saints. They beat up Jameis and made Jameis Winston do Jameis Winston things. Week three, it's going to be the Texans, and they're going to beat up another rookie quarterback and make Davis Mills do Davis Mills things.
I would not be necessarily as – I mean, look, I'm very confident in this defense right now. It's an exciting defense, one that I haven't – no, I don't know if I've ever seen a defense like this. And not that we haven't had good defenses. It's just got its own character is what I'm saying, is that 2013 defense is really one of my favorite – you know, 60 sacks. That was a great year. But this one is its own thing. We're excited and optimistic about it. But if – Tyrod, or as our guest last night called him, Ty God Taylor, would be playing. The Houston Texans, I wouldn't just necessarily feel like there is, that it wouldn't even be close. But I do feel at this point, like all things are rolling for the Carolina Panthers. And it's time for this offense to click. And it's on its way. I don't like the talk about, oh, it's not like the offense. It's ahead of schedule. Cody, tomorrow night, we go into Houston. We play a defense that has had a lot of turnovers. What are you into on this, into this game? What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm wanting to see more of this defense. I read a stat today that, you know, the Panthers are the best third down defense, yet we're only rated 16th in the amount of times that we blitz. So that's a pretty damn good thing to me. That means we're not, you know, we're pretty much getting home with our front four. which I think is an incredible thing. I want to know, you know, basically, is our defense going to be able to get after their quarterback effectively? We had kind of differing sources. I had heard from some Texans fans that their pass protection was actually kind of decent for the Texans and that they sort of faltered in running the football. So I'm interested to see just how much this Panthers defense really pins their ears back and tries to take advantage of a rookie quarterback across the field in Davis Mills.
Josh, how long is this defense a flash in the pan, or are they the real deal?
The way I think about this defense is I think they're a high variance unit. So they're going to be really good some weeks, and they're going to make mistakes. Like they're young. I mean, when you have Dante Jackson and J.C. Horn, no matter how good J.C. has been through the first two games, he's still a rookie. He's still going to make mistakes. He's going to go up against a top tier wide receiver probably next weekend, and is really going to face some tests and is going to, you know, he may make some mistakes. And the same thing for this front four and the pass rush. There are going to be times when they're just not getting after it. And that I think is kind of a consequence of youth, but at the same time, like when they're on, they're on. And that when you're a young defense like this, exactly. When you're a young defense like this, you catch fire, you start rolling. And it's almost like, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but this short week couldn't have come at a better time for them because they are rolling on defense.
They're hot.
And when they're ready to go. They're ready to get out there and face these guys. And I talked to Al Wallace, who was a former defensive lineman. And he was on that 2003 defense where with Peppers, Rucker, you know, Buckner, Jank, like they could just get after the quarterback.
Dogs. They were all dogs, dude.
And Al said on the sidelines, they were just like climbing over each other to get onto the field. Because when you start rolling downhill, you feel like you can get after that quarterback all the time. And that's how they feel right now. That's how Brian Burns and Hassan Reddick feel. That's how Morgan Fox feels. That's how Daquan Jones feels. That's how all these guys feel. They can get after them, and they want to get back out there on the field and do it. I don't want to flip the script here, but I would really like to. I'm curious what, because I want to know what you guys' opinions on Sam Darnold is, because
dude, I'm big time into Sam Darnold.
Hopefully anti-Teddy, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Totally. How are you guys feeling about the Darnold experience?
I'll start with this. I want to congratulate Teddy Bridgewater on his best football he's ever played in two games with Denver. They are. He's thrown more 20-yard plus passes than anybody in the league. That was our issue with him, is that it's arm strength. It's the ceiling. He had a high floor and a low ceiling. And that was our thing with this, is that, and so look, we had to be optimistic. We were kind of, and look, I was jaded about Teddy just because I love Cam so much. So yeah. I will admit that is like, that I, you know, I had some saltiness from the beginning, but I was rooting for the guy to be successful because I want my team to win, and we're a fan podcast, and that's what we're cheering for every damn week. So I wasn't cheering for him to fail, but I felt like early on I could see what I believe, and I'm just an armchair quarterback, so what do I know? Some sort of a certain limitation. So, look, when they sold us Sam Darnold, I had to believe into it. I got to wear the rose-colored glasses and hope that it works. But I say through 2 weeks, man, I think it's been better than I expected it. You know, is that like it's met the bar, if not exceeded it. And if you take away that one play in this past game, it would be almost perfect for my expectations. And that is, Josh, I tell you this, I go back to a story right away when the vaccines came out, right? Like when the vaccine came out, and then David Newton asked Christian McCaffrey and Sam Darnold if they're getting the vaccine. And they were like, well, we got to talk to our friends and family or something like that. And then his follow up question is, don't you think a good leader would do so? You know, it's something to that effect. And then the next interview with Rhule, and I give him credit for this, is he pokes it. And he said this. He said, well, don't you think, what do you think about the leadership and the vaccine issue or something? It was like, and I'm paraphrasing, I know I'm getting it wrong. But Matt Rhule said, we don't need Sam Darnold to be a leader. We need him to learn how to play quarterback in this system. We have leaders in this team. And I look at what teams do when they draft a guy at number two or one and they ask you on a bad team to be our savior. Resurrect this organization like they did in New York. And I don't think that pressure is on Sam Darnold. I think you can see it. I think the defense is playing good right now. I think that he's starting to trust in his ability more. So I am all in at this moment until I'm not. Cody, what do you think about old Sammy?
Yeah, Josh, I can be really quick with my answer. I'm concerned about a few different positions on this football team. I would even say I have a lot of concern about certain positions on this football team, but I don't feel like quarterback is one of them. I mean, I think that when Sam has had a clean pocket to go through or to throw from, he has gone through his progressions well. He's confident in his arm. He's not afraid to push the ball into tight windows. There was a few of those passes to DJ Moore against that Saints game where, I mean, he fit that ball into a spot. And you have to really trust your arm to make those kinds of throws, and you really have to be on rhythm with your receivers. And I feel like Sam has done well and continues to do well. And in fact, I would even say that he has, I mean, it's only been two games, but I think he's built on his performances. I thought he was better against the Saints than he was against the Texans. I just think Sam's success is going to live and die by the pass protection. And I'm just, I'm worried that this offensive line, specifically the interior, could end up being a problem for him and Christian. But
CK, what did you think about Sam?
So mine, there's a couple of things, and this past game, there's two plays that I think are going heavily unnoticed. That I think was just, I think that it is going to indicate, it's going to be highlight reel type things when you see later on. Right now, they're not talking about it because it's Sam Darnold. And I have a couple of gripes, and I'll, you know, bring up some things here from, you know, national media on the Panthers, but and ask Josh's opinion. But I'll tell you this, the two plays that I'm talking about, one, the most impressive play was Cam Jordan almost getting the strip sack and Sam Darnold having that hand strength to hold onto the ball. But not only that, not just panic, he's able to look downfield and find Dan Arnold down the field and complete a very big down. And give us a new, you know, move the chains. That was, you know, I felt like a big time play. And that's the type of play that I think you see top tier quarterbacks make. But I also saw one that was another Dan Arnold. I think that was Dan Arnold that he had completed that first one. But then it was just a timing thing. And it was just so small that they did a couple of replays, but it wasn't, nobody wanted to talk about it. He recognized the defender's locations. Dan Arnold was making, you know, running from the right side of the field across the left. And if he threw it in stride with Dan Arnold, it was getting an interception. But he had to throw it behind Dan Arnold, giving Dan the ability to reach back and catch the ball. But it was in a perfect window to where the defender had no chance, and Dan Arnold was the only one that was going to be possible to catch that. I thought that was an incredible play. I've been super, you know, impressed with a lot of those. I think that he passes the eye test. And to answer your question, Josh, I think he's absolutely, you know, at least from a ceiling perspective, he's got more to, I guess, potential than Teddy Bridgewater has. You can watch when Teddy Bridgewater, even now, throws the ball. You could just, slow. You feel like something's missing.
Slow motion, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it's once slow you, motion. But here's my gripe. And I'm going to ask you if you think this way, Josh, the same way I do. Obviously we've all had our gripes about the power rankings, how disrespected, not obviously we're not saying we should be top five. But when you look at the other 2-0 teams, they're giving so much respect to the Broncos. They're giving so much, like, it just feels like we're being disrespected in that front. But you know where we're really being disrespected, or at least Sam Darnold is being disrespected, is the NFL QB rankings. They've got him ranked as 25th. Okay, which give them two games, you know, that's understandable. Don't move them all the way up to top 10, right? But if you're going to do that, you've also got to give Mac Jones the ability to be at the bottom of the list. They've got him above Sam Darnold. They've got Joe Burrow above Sam Darnold. And they've got Jameis Winston above Sam Darnold, right? Carson Wentz, who has been absolute garbage this year. I don't know if you guys have seen it. He has not been a good quarterback. It's Matt Ryan, who has not been a good quarterback. I just feel like they have Tyrod Taylor at 17, which he was doing a decent job. Don't get me wrong, but there's a reason that he has been a journeyman. He's never been the franchise guy. He is not going to be top-tier quarterback.
Puncture your lung too.
Do you feel like, Josh, that those power rankings are disrespectful, or do you think that it's fair that he is behind some of these guys, even a Mac Jones who is heavily unproven in this league as well, but they're giving him, I guess, the legacy treatment being that he's on a team coached by Bill Belichick?
So much of this, so much of these like narratives, these national, especially like power rankings or Pro Bowl, like they're based on the voting of a lot of media members that don't actually watch all the games.
Right.
So it would not surprise me that people are like, yeah, whatever, Sam Darnold, he throws lots of picks, put him at the bottom of the list. Right. Especially when I would imagine he started at the bottom in the probably 32, right? Worst.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, especially for it takes a while for them to move up. I can guarantee you if he has a nice game on national TV tomorrow night, he'll be a lot higher on that list. Like that's right. All it takes, because the reality is they look and they say, okay, Sam Darnold played against the Jets. He had a pretty good game against the Saints. Let's bump him up. The guys that you listed, those are all national quarterbacks. Mac Jones plays for the New England Patriots. Yeah. Jameis Winston just beat up Aaron Rodgers 38-3 in week one. Carson Wentz used to play in Philly, so that one is not a great excuse. But like some of these guys, like they're always going to get the benefit of the doubt. And a lot of this, they just kind of like, they know that if they put Sam Darnold down in the bottom third, they're not going to get a whole lot of complaints. They're going to get Panthers fans that are going to be upset. But if you put Mac Jones at 26 or 28,
like the whole country is going to get upset.
Yeah. So
no, you're actually right. Is that there's the media is so the national media is very reactionary.
Right.
We saw that with the Green Bay stuff. Is that I came in here talking about, look, I watched that Saints game against Green Bay, and I'm not trying to dog the Saints and take anything away from them, but the Green Bay Packers were atrocious in that game on every side of the ball. So it's not like I just walked away going, oh man, the Saints are going to on the way to the Super Bowl. And turned out, you know, they had some obstacles. Cody, go ahead and get in there.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to really quick highlight some questions that we had in the chat real quick. Tree Fitty wants to know, what's the likelihood that a running back two can contribute on this football team? Or are we pretty much just going to be dependent upon Christian McCaffrey and just this rotation of every once in a while bringing in Chuba Hubbard or potentially Royce Freeman?
The answer is no. A running back will not contribute. Can contribute, yes. Will contribute, no. This offense is built around Christian McCaffrey. This entire team is built around Christian McCaffrey. They're going to give him, they're going to keep him on the field, for every single down. I mean, come on.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I have no problem with anything. I have no problem with any of the carries that he got until they were up by 19 points with 2:34 left. And they ran him straight into the line for two carries. Why is he taking those carries? That's why you drafted Chuba Hubbard. Put someone else in. I don't even care. Put Royce Freeman in that you signed off the street. There's no reason for Christian McCaffrey, especially after you had to go in and get IVs between the third and the fourth quarter, to be taking those carries when you're up by 19 and the game is over. The Saints took a knee on the next possession. So that's how much that possession meant to them. And you're out there running Christian McCaffrey.
Those are the reps we don't need. That's a great point.
Keep him on the field. He needs to be on the field. They need him to play. They need him to have 100 yards on both receiving and rushing in order for them to have a chance. He's the on their offense by leaps and bounds. And I know that DJ Moore is very good. Robbie Anderson is very good. But Christian McCaffrey's on a different level. He's an elite level NFL player. And he should be getting – nobody's questioning Derrick Henry's amount of touches. Nobody's questioning
Alvin Kamara. Nobody's saying protect Alvin Kamara.
That was a great point that Al made this morning, by the way.
Wow.
On one-day contract. Yeah, Al was talking about that. He's like, nobody questions that. Nobody questions these other guys. Derrick Henry just being the complete workhorse of this entire offense. But when it comes to Christian McCaffrey, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he was injured last year. But I also think that it has a lot to do with the fact that he was the only piece this team had. Like, the Saints had other pieces, right? At least the only superstar that we had. The Saints had other people. The Tennessee Titans had other people. And I think that, you know, from a fan base perspective, I think there was a fear around losing Christian McCaffrey. And now, obviously, we did last year. And that fear came to reality. And now we're doubling down on that. Oh, let's get him out of there. But I do agree with Josh's point.
Alvin Kamara was hurt last year. I have a controversial opinion. I don't like to race bait it. But I wonder if it's because he's white. And not because he. I wonder if that has anything to do with it. Because we asked the Saints fan this. It was a great guest we had. We said, is anybody talking about Alvin Kamara getting too much? Because they both signed big deals at the same time. Right. They're both basically the same player. And for Cody on this show is that he's been not upset with the Panthers, but he thinks that sinking that much money into the running back position is just futile, period, to a certain degree. And then my position is that Christian McCaffrey's not just a running back. He's a transcendental player, and it's not like just a regular running back. The Saints have a very, very similar situation. And he had the best answer. He said, man, there are Saints fans saying that we don't give them the ball enough. And I just thought, and I don't think, I just wonder, why is it that we have to protect Christian McCaffrey so much? But and I just don't hear that sentiment around the league.
Is it a Carolina thing? Players. I mean, that's what people wanted to do. Maybe. They wanted to take the ball out of Cam's hands, too. Don't let him hit. Don't let him get hit.
You're right.
Oh. And I mean,
maybe it is.
We don't get nice things very often. So we wrap. It's basically the equivalent of you go to your grandmother's house and you can't sit on her favorite couch.
Well, she got the plastic on it.
I'm not Italian, man.
I got an old Italian grandma. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got some plastic on it, or you got to put the cover on it. Cody, what else do people in the chat room want to know?
So we have a two part question right here. When will we see more of Tommy Tremble? This has been something that we've really been wanting to see involved more in the offense. And then after Tommy Tremble, how much does AJ Bouye coming back and his play tomorrow, how much does that change things, if anything, for the Panthers defense? And shout out to Ross Gould for the $5.
Shout out Ross. Great question. My favorite friend. I think you're going to see AJ Bouye play a pretty healthy amount. I mean, he's going to play the nickel. So I don't think it's going to be a question of, I think there are some people that are like, oh, he's going to take Dante or JC Horn snaps. That's not going to be if he's out there, he's out there with JC and with Dante Jackson as the nickel. Last week, they moved JC against the Saints. They had JC Horn as the nickel. And they have put Rashawn Melvin on the outside. Rashawn Melvin is a guy that they brought up from the practice squad. So they don't want to do that, obviously. I mean, it worked out because the Saints don't have any wide receivers, and Jameis didn't have any time. So I think you'll see AJ Bouye get some playing time. It's just a matter of conditioning. I wouldn't surprise me if he got more time in the first half than the second half, but it's all going to depend on whatever the Texans do, right? If the Texans, they run the first week one, I know for a fact they ran a bunch of like three tight end sets, which is weird. And so if they run three tight end sets, you're not going to see AJ Bouye out there. But if they're running three wide receiver sets, you're going to see AJ Bouye out there. And then Tommy Tremble, I mean, Tommy Tremble's playing like 30% of the snaps. Like, you're just not hearing his name because he's not getting any targets. So I think he's a guy they brought in to be a blocker, to bring along slowly. We knew he was third on the depth chart coming in. I feel like he's kind of getting okay playing time for for where they for what they drafted him to do. Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised Ian Thomas is getting so much run, but that's just that's my own question. But.
You're not the only one.
Oh man, y'all are so hard on Ian.
I'm not even being hard on him. I'm just saying you signed Dan Arnold to be the tight end, and you got him out there throwing blocks, and Ian Thomas running all the routes, and it's like, what? It's just confusing to me. I'm not mad at it. I'm just confused. That's Josh, my big thing.
Josh, I wanted to ask you this. I think you and I have even had a few spirited back and forths on Twitter about this, but. As I alluded to earlier, I really believe that the interior of this offensive line is a problem and continues to be a problem. Pat Elflin is on IR now, but he wasn't playing good by any stretch of the imagination before. I think Paradis has even left wanting. We definitely have, in Matt Rhule's words, an I-85 situation on our offensive line. But, and maybe I'm just stubborn. Maybe I watched too much Alabama film, Josh. And I'm willing to admit that, too. But I really think Deonte Brown has a tremendous upside to be a very good tackle in this league. And even Brady Christensen.
Guard.
And even Brady Christensen, I thought was very impressive during the preseason and in training camp. So my question to you is this. Knowing that the Panthers have, so many issues on the offensive line, is there any chance at all some of these younger players might be able to work their way into a more consistent rotation? Guys like Deonte Brown, who hasn't dressed the past 2 weeks, and guys like Brady Christensen, who may potentially even play tackle for the Panthers.
Yes, I definitely think that these guys can crack the lineup, certainly into the rotation. I think coaches... we tend to kill Ron Rivera for this, right? He was always veterans over rookies, right? Always. Yes. But I think that's not just him. I think we just saw it because he was here in Carolina. I think most coaches are going to say, okay, I need, especially in the offensive line, they can't have a guy going out there and screwing up. Like, you can go out there and I would rather have the devil that I know have a bad guard that I know is going to go out there and be in the right spot and maybe not be as talented,
right?
Rather than a guy that I think might be in the right spot, but definitely has a little bit more talent. But if he messes up, maybe he can make up. Like, I think, especially early in the season, I think a coach is more willing to go with somebody that he already knows. That being said, they really like John Miller. So I think John Miller is not, they're not. Like, he's going to be the right guard, especially now that he's already had COVID, which was going to be the thing that might have kept him out. If he could stay healthy, he's going to start the rest of the season. The big question is going to be at left guard for me, is whether, because yeah. I think Dennis Daly was pushing Elflin in training camp. I think Brady Christensen can push them on the left side. I think Deonte Brown might be the top backup at some point, but I don't think Deonte Brown, to me, is a guy that they're like hoping gets in the lineup. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like if Deonte Brown is starting some games in this season, something has gone wrong. Whereas like Brady, I think, could be starting games just over the natural course of the season.
Right. Okay.
And here's the other thing. I have gotten this stuff totally wrong before too, in terms of like player development. So like, Deonte Brown might be, can we curse on this show?
We're
on
yeah, yes, right? Yes, fuck yes. Yeah, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. Deonte yeah, Brown might be fucking incredible, but like, but to me, it's like I haven't seen it yet. Especially, I haven't seen him at this lower weight too, because he's lost like he's down 20 pounds. They were concerned about him keeping his weight off, which he has done a good job of. But like, I'm not sure about it. But
he's been inactive too. I mean, yeah. That's the thing. That's another thing is that that kind of tells us a little thing about it. What do you think is, look, you're writing about this stuff all day. You're trying to crack the code of what people want to know and stuff like that. What do you think the top storylines are? What are you interested in going into this game? You know, like if we could just write the story that we want to write, you know, like what is going on that you think is important for, if you could ask a question or write a headline, what is it?
Well, I'd love to see some of the things that have gone wrong for Joe Brady get fixed. Like, I would love to see the red zone be a little bit more consistent.
The third quarter.
I would love to be the third.
Which is not him.
Them coming out of the second half. I mean, this is not just this season either. If something, whatever, two games, it's not a good sample size, but it's over the course of the 18 games of Joe Brady's career, they have not been good in the third quarter. They have not been good in the red zone. They've been questionable on fourth down too. So I think that, and to me, that is something that I think is going to cause a problem later on if this team wants to be competing for a playoff spot. I think, you know, that they, I would like to see improvement in those areas. In terms of, like,
do you think you will?
I hope so. I think so.
I mean, think this team's going to get better from week to week. I truly think this team is not at its best at this moment. I think the defense might be at a high point at this, but I think the offense has not been bad. But it can be tighter.
Yeah,
and I think they can get better. Last year, the defense got better from week to week. And like you are saying, I'd like to see that offense get better from week to week.
The offense has not played from behind for even 1 second of this game, of this season so far. They have led for the defense has shut out opposing offenses in the first half for both games. So they've gone into halftime with a huge lead. That makes it a lot easier for Sam Darnold, makes it a lot easier for Joe Brady. So I'd be curious to see what happens. I don't think it's going to happen in Houston, but if they do go down 10-0, you know, 14-7, you know, what does that Sam Darnold look like? Does he start to press a little bit? But ultimately, the thing that I'm really – that I'm not concerned about, but I have questions about – is what happens if they do win in impressive fashion. And on Friday morning, everyone is talking about the upstart 3-0 Carolina Panthers, and they have 10 days going into Dallas, hearing their names being called, with Brian Burns going on SportsCenter, with Jeremy Chin's vintage jersey, like showing, like being the talk of the town on Friday in the national country. And last year they won 3 straight games, and they played terrible against the Bears, right? And they were not good in that game. Nick Foles ate their lunch. And Teddy Bridgewater after the game said some of these guys were reading their own press clippings. And like that's what happens sometimes on a young team. And I want to make sure that doesn't happen on this team. So I'll be curious to see how they avoid that if that does happen.
You make a really interesting point about that too, is that, you know, especially going into that Cowboys matchup, that's a potent offense. They have a lot of different ways to attack this defense with Amari Cooper and Gallup and CeeDee Lamb. I think that's probably the early, I mean, other than the Saints, you know, crossing them off the list, the Dallas Cowboys, that's going to be a pretty big matchup for this Carolina Panthers team. And I think one that potentially has the potential to put us on the map. I wanted to ask you this. You mentioned Teddy Bridgewater briefly and things that he's said. There's been this rumor that has gone around ever since Teddy Bridgewater did a podcast where he said that the Panthers didn't practice enough red zone drills and they weren't very efficient in the red zone because they didn't practice it a ton. Was there ever any truth to that? And do you think that if there was any truth to it, that Joe Brady has done anything to remedy that situation?
Also, I thought of one more thing. I'd like for them to make field goals and extra points. Just if another thing that I could add to the sure. list of things I'd
maybe
like
to return pay. A punt beyond 2 yards too.
Also, don't punt from inside the 35. If you're inside their 35 yard line, you go for it or kick the field goal. I think that, man, I would love to tell you, hey, I was out there, they were practicing 2 minute drill all the time. The media is only in there for stretching basically during the season. But I do think that maybe they could have worked on it a little bit more. I think when you see what they did last year, I mean, they weren't good in the red zone last year. They weren't good at 2 minute drills last year. So it's like, if they were practicing it all the time, they probably should have been better at it. So
do you think COVID could have had to do with any of this? Is that sure, like they're kind of like we got to limit proximity, we got to limit, you know? And then last year, I do felt like they were like, I feel like Matt Rhule has been rest players is better than practicing at times. You know, is that like the analytics of like, let's not get you hurt. We saw what happened in Baltimore. I don't know. Is that they had to have practiced it.
The idea that they're not practicing red zone, they're not practicing 2-minute drill is ridiculous. They definitely did. It's just a matter of whether he felt like they were getting enough reps. And also, if you're a quarterback, aren't you supposed, if you're the leader of the team, aren't you supposed to go to Joe Brady and be like, hey man, we're not practicing 2-minute enough. Like,
yeah.
Hey man, like we suck in the red zone. Can we do extra drills? Hey, Zylstra, can you stay afterwards and catch passes for me? Those are the kind of things that you should be doing as a leader. And maybe he was, I don't know, but,
yeah,
to me, it's like, I think it's
Joe Brady's first year on the job too. Right.
Yeah, it's like, and Matt Rhule too. So
they're
learning how to run NFL practices themselves, you know? And the other thing is like, it's real easy for Teddy to take a shot going out the door. I mean, Lord knows the Panthers took shots at him on his way out the door. So it's like, if I were him, I would be like, yeah, fuck those guys. We didn't practice the red zone enough. How do you like that?
Sure.
Also, yeah, whatever. The bubble sucks.
He definitely, you know, like, he also didn't practice deep passes either, clearly, because I didn't throw any of them.
I had always had an inclination that Teddy Bridgewater was very aware of what was being said about him on Twitter.
Oh, he's got burners, bro. I know he does.
100%. But hey, before we go any forward, CK, you already know what time it is.
To those in chat, do me a favor, hit that thumbs up button, because this is now subscriber shame.
Subscriber shame, 96 people watching, 41 thumbs up. All we ask is that you hit the thumbs up, like and subscribe, hit the notification bell for every time we go live with Panther Beat reporters like Josh Klein himself, man. We're giving you guys good information, good news. Hit the thumbs up for C3 Panther News.
That's bullshit. Hit that thumbs up, Tree Fitty. Shane Welch.
Yeah, that's what I tell them.
Chad Jochens. What are you doing, Chad Jochens? Hit the thumbs up, Chad.
Hit the thumbs up.
Get it now.
Is this the Joey Sly revenge game? Joey Sly comes out after we cut him, and then it's a disaster. I don't know what our kicking thing is, and I don't even really care at this point. But we have this, what was his name? Santoso? What was his first name?
Ryan Santoso.
Ryan Santoso. He was here just for a minute. I just learned to love his mustache, and that was
a cup of coffee.
I know. Joey Sly was here for years. Joey Sly then goes to Houston, bangs out 3 extra points, 3 field goals, but then last week misses a 42 or something like that yard field goal that could have maybe brought them in. It wouldn't have really helped that much. What is going on with our kicking game? I don't really care about the Joey Sly revenge game. I'm not talking about that. But like, what is going on with our special teams? Why is it that we have the number one defense in the league? We have a sort of respectable offense, but I think our DVOA, I read for, and I don't even really know what that means. It just sounds fancy. That we're the last one. And I can tell you this, I just look at football. We don't return punts. The only good player on our special teams is our punter. That dude is badass. And he did
I will not sit here and accept this JJ Jansen shame.
Yeah,
I mean, JJ Jansen is the
old best man. He is.
Come on. Like, hasn't had a bad snap since 2008.
All right. You're right. All right. So we got 2 good players. Now, I mean, I'm not even saying they're
right.
Nothing is going well on special teams other than the punt game. It feels
Hey, Erickson had that heads up play. Like, let's be honest. He may not be the greatest returner, but
it turns out to be a muff play is the thing that you're highlighting.
Hey, listen, it wasn't his fault. He had a very like that. You got to imagine the amount of panic that probably goes through your mind in that moment. And he was able to pop onto that ball, not let it fly around like what happened with a lot of people. I think that's worth at least admiring for a bit. There was a positive there.
We had a penalty, Josh, in the last game where we didn't have enough players out there. I mean, not a penalty. We had to call a timeout. I keep saying I felt it was a penalty. We put ourselves in the penalty box by calling a timeout there. What is going on with the special teams? And not just like you can pick it. Like, I mean, it's the whole thing. Why is it not better?
It's a great question. I think there are a couple reasons for it. I think the main reason is that special teams is all about depth, because it's basically made up of like the last 20 guys on your roster. Everybody thinks about the kicker, punter, and punt returner, but it's like the guys going down there and covering kicks are like the linebackers that you've never heard of. They're Jermaine Carter when he was a rookie. They're I'm trying to think of guys that are low down this roster
don't even know him. Hatsfield, exactly, like, but he's hurt now.
It's like Clay Johnston, you know? It's like Stan Thomas Oliver. Like, these are
Rashawn,
the guys that
right,
are on the special team. And so, you know, a team like, you know, a more established veteran team, those guys are better at special teams. And on this team is young, and they're trying to get better, and they're trying to establish depth. And maybe they're taking shots on guys at their 35th guy on the roster that they want to get better. But that being said, it's just got to get better. And I think it comes down to Chase Blackburn. I don't think
they loan holdout from a previous era.
It was incredible to me that Chase got brought back after they gave up two punt returns in the same game in week 16 of that last Ron Rivera season, the Perry Fuel season. And now he's still here. And you know, it's surprising that this special teams unit has been so bad without there being some sort of repercussions. And they have not, and they've been bad over the course of the past year too. So, yeah, there are always excuses. The kicker thing is like, whatever, man. Kickers are set, like, there's like four good kickers in the league. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then every other team
there's
is just
gotta
just
be more
through.
Than that.
Well, two of them have been on the Panthers before, but
hey, Graham Gunner. So you it's know like, that somebody said on Twitter, I love this, is they said the Panthers are streaming kickers like my fantasy team. I thought that was like the most brilliant thing ever. Are we the new Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Kicker wise?
They couldn't. Yeah. I mean, do we have the yips forever? Like, I don't even know if they still have them. What did it take Tom Brady to get rid of them? They drafted
like
a kicker at second.
I feel like our kicking woes aren't quite as prominent as theirs was, though. They had bad juju kicking.
We have a curse, and I'm calling it the butt curse.
I like that.
We cut them, and then that was the start of it all.
Guys, I got 5% left on my laptop, so you can either cut me out to let me go grab my charger, or we can you can ask me one more super important question. Which one? I'm glad to come back.
It's your choice.
All right. I'm cutting out the video. You guys chat, talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. All right. Sounds
good. So we are going to, because like we need to ask about the Houston Texans a little bit. Davis Mills. Let's game plan. He's away. We can talk amongst ourselves.
Let's just talk
amongst yourselves. I'm just getting verklempt.
He's got his.
What have we not asked about?
I feel like
we can't ask him about David Newton. You can't ever ask a reporter.
Yeah,
about
you can.
Reporter.
You need it.
No, you can't. Listen,
can't. You can ask.
It's not cool. We got to ask him about the Warren Report, like the change the culture. How do we?
Oh, yeah. Let's ask him. Then keep pounding. And also, chat room, if you have any suggestions for questions you want to ask, drop them in the chat room. We'll throw them to him. What's the point of having a live chat room, you know, if we can't get some chat room questions?
Also, ask him how to get Cody Lasney his media pass.
I know this. This is what I wanted to ask is the vanilla training camp. He said that the Matt Rhule mantra is about come to work, do the same thing over and over and over. Nothing changes. Is that why the training camp was vanilla? It feels like. And is that why Sam Darnold feels comfortable? All right, go ahead, Cody. We've been talking amongst ourselves. We huddled up, and we got a couple of good questions.
We think we have a real good one for you. We really want to get to the bottom of this keep pounding debacle. that has gone on around the stadium, and whether or not the fans should be prompted or unprompted. I always want to say unprompted with the British accent. I don't know why. But there's been this debate about that was sparked, and I believe you were even a part of it. I saw you chime in on this on Twitter, too. What is the deal with this keep pounding chant? Why is David Tepper trying to change a tried and true formula? Is there any method to the madness that would actually get Panther fans to start this chat on our own? And I'll also posit this question to you that I've been asking to others as well. David Tepper is still being a fairly new owner. I believe he's in his third or fourth year as the owner of the team. Is David Tepper aware of all of the little things about this team that we do love and hold dear, you know, like keep pounding and the colors of the football team and all these other things?
So we'll start at the beginning. So the whole controversy came week one. They don't play. They pound the keep pounding drum, and then right before kickoff, basically as far back as I can remember. I mean, not as far back as I remember, because I went to the games in Clemson. But like for the past five, six years, they play the keep pound. They put the arrows on the screen, keep, and then pounding, and the crowd chants along, trying to get 70,000 people to chant keep pounding at the same time. It's not easy, because you end up with just kind of a muddled mess, especially before the game starts. And they didn't do it in week one. And there was some reaction on Twitter from some fans. I didn't actually see that didn't happen until somebody else brought it back. And so the Roaring Riot is essentially the voice. I mean, not the voice of the fan base by any means, but the reality is they have a bigger pipeline.
It's the fan perspective. That's what we're trying to deliver, the fan perspective. And that's what you guys have given.
When the Roaring Riot tweets out, you know, that they want Keep Pounding to stay, the reality is that there were two options, right? It was either an oversight and they missed it before week one, or they intentionally didn't play it. Whether or not the idea is to just take that away before the game, or whether they were trying to phase out keep pounding, whatever. Either way, that's not okay. I don't think that's okay. I don't think any of the three of you guys think that's okay. I don't think anybody in the chat thinks it's okay. Whether you forgot it or whether you're trying to move on from it, neither one of those is good. Both of them are actively bad. So what the Roaring Riot wanted to do was just bring that to the organization's attention and make sure that they knew how important that keep pounding was to the fan base, just in case, you know, with a new owner and some new people in the building and make sure that it was going to come back. And I think that was exactly what happened. This is what a supporter group should do, is, you know, amplify the concerns of the fans, to the ownership. You asked about
this is why Tepper. Twitter is so awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why Twitter is so awesome.
It's however many retweets it got, 1,500 retweets, and, you know, people are responding to it. And
keep pounding was trending on Twitter for a long time.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Way to go, guys.
And not only that, and I don't know whether this is whether these two things are related, but to me, what was the crowd on Sunday was the best crowd that they've had in there since 2017 in a walk. 2018, 2019 was nothing compared to this crowd. Saints, they were engaged immediately right off the bat. They were causing false starts, timeouts before third downs. Like, this is how a crowd should be. And maybe felt like they were chanting keep pounding constantly, to try and maybe show that it was, that it's important. And they, the team said that they wanted to start organically. To me, I feel like, you know, it's hard to get 70,000 people to do the same things at the same time. Also, they played
this organization. I mean, this franchise.
They put JETS on the Jets on the big screen in New York. They put when in Green Bay, they play the like.
That's why we go to the game.
They do that so you can't. All that stuff doesn't happen organically. So it's ridiculous to me. All of the things that they said, all the entire debacle of it, was a misstep by them, and hopefully they can correct it going forward.
Should we be afraid of how out of touch that seemingly makes them look? I mean, how that seems to be very simple. You would prompt your war cry and keep pounding. Like, that seems kind of simple to me, and to me, it's even kind of worrisome, if I'm being frank.
I don't disagree. I don't think either scenario is a good one.
I think for that exact reason, Josh, I think that seems like it was a PR response that, you know, that I almost believe that it, you know, you kind of get this feeling that David Tepper wants to make this team his team, and, you know, and which is understandable, it is, but, you know, it's sort of like when you get a new GM, they a lot of times clean house. They don't want the players they didn't bring in on the team, things like that. You almost wonder if that's a part of it, because that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like you said, every other organization, even the Chiefs, one of the most, you know, loyal fan bases, one of the most, you know, I guess, energetic fan bases, they still have that on their main screen as well. So you're 100% right. I don't think that explanation made much sense. I think it does feel like they're walking back the decision, because it does feel like there was almost a conscious decision to get rid of it.
Is Tepper as involved as we think he is? When you know, we were all excited to have an owner come in who had a personality, right? It felt like sure. There was a honeymoon period with David Tepper where nothing could go wrong. Look, is my Twitter picture is me 35 pounds heavier beside David Tepper, and I don't even want to change it. I should put a skinny pickup now. But you know, we're all in love with the freshness after, you know. But
yeah, man, remember he put that logo at midfield? He did the after the coming out of the, and it was just like, oh man, this guy's the best. This guy's gonna, and he was like drinking. He came to the Roaring Riot tailgate. He was drinking beers, and it's like, oh, like this is awesome. Our best friend now owns the team.
London, like even when he went out to London, like he was just out there hanging out with the fans. I mean, that's something that I think we all were like, oh, this is the guy. And I think we all kind of had a false, well, I wouldn't say false, because there's still a building process going on, but you almost felt like, this guy knows what he's doing. You believe he knows that where he's leading this team, and like he's going to take us.
Because he was a fan, he was a friend. But now, and I don't know if we're reading too much into it. I don't think we are. Is that when he said he's the tiebreaker between what was it, Rule and Fitterer or something like that?
Yeah,
he seems very involved in the daily operations. That's what I would say. He seems very present and very involved. Are we reading that right?
I don't know if he's very. I mean, I think he's involved. Don't get me wrong. I think he runs a lot. I mean, obviously he owns the team. I think he makes a lot of decisions, maybe more decisions than maybe we think. But I think that he is like, I think maybe he's like, you know how when your boss like walks by you and is like, man, what's up with that painting? And then just like keeps walking. You're like, we got to get that painting out of there. Like you heard what he said, right? Like.
Yeah.
And so it's like if Tepper walks by and he's like, man, that 3-4 really worked in Pittsburgh, huh? And then he just keeps on walking. And it's like, you're Ron Rivera. And you're like, I didn't have a very good season last year.
We got to change over to this.
I kind of think of the keep pounding thing disappearing as like, I think of some 22-year-old ad person in there getting him in a pitch about how we should freshen up the court, like whatever. And they're like, this is our new plan. And they're like, all right, let's run with it. And speaking of, how is the mixed reality joint in the stadium? Because it's gotten a lot of love among Panther fans just watching it from afar.
And is
it cool?
Media.
Is it as cool?
I don't know,
in
man. It's
stadium?
Cool, I guess. Like, it's so crazy.
What do
to me
you think about it?
People are texting and being like, "Is that Panther really in the stadium? Like, is that Panther really in the stadium? What's this, Ghostbusters?
Somebody
like,
really said that?
Like, oh, can y'all see it? Like, is it like what world are
it's
we living
in? Like, it's on the board. It's on the video board, folks.
So it's fine. It's cool. It's a good idea. Like, I mean, the Panthers, like, their digital media staff is incredible. So anything that they put together, I think that was an outside company. But yeah, like the Ravens did it a couple years ago. When they put it on the big screen week one, I was like, cool. Like I just figured all the teams had done it at this point, at some point. And I guess they were the second to do it. So what do you
Cody,
do?
I think we're the reason the eyes changed. The very first thing I said after the first time I saw it on this
podcast,
why are the eyes green? Did he eat the flag and his eyes turn green? Did he eat the Jets? And then the next week,
it's blue. It's blue, man. Panthers, they keep an eye. They keep an eye on the podcasters. They keep an eye on Twitter. They
ear to the ground.
I hate to break that bubble a little bit, but Pat McAfee was also talking about it as well. So,
Did
they mention the green eyes though?
Yeah, they mentioned the green eyes. They're like, hopefully they can change that to blue, purple, whatever they want to do. But like, they definitely, he definitely brought the green eyes up.
Do you get to watch Monday Night Football and stuff like that, Josh?
Yeah, you, absolutely.
You like the Peyton joint?
Eli. I watched it. So I actually didn't realize it was on week one. So I didn't watch it. And then I'm like listening to a podcast the next day. Everybody's like, oh my God, did you hear Peyton and Eli? It was incredible. It's the best thing I've ever heard. And it's like, oh shit, I got to watch that this week. So
week one
I didn't even change it over. I watched all of Peyton and Eli. It was good. Gronk was terrible, but like those guys are so smart that I feel like they're like teaching you I feel like the four of us like know the same amount as most announcers. You know what I'm saying? Like when they're like, hey, well, like this, you know, here, let's talk about run fits. And it's like, all right, well, I understand run fits. But like when Peyton starts saying like, okay, well, like here's the safety up here. And like when he starts coming down, you're going to see the way that they run this option route. And it's like, man, that's the kind of stuff that I don't know. So it's like, it's big, big nerdy, like football stuff. I thought it was awesome.
Will Cam Newton be in the NFL anytime soon or ever again?
Oh boy.
My favorite player outside of Julius Peppers. Like they are my two favorite people in the world.
If this
I defend them to the ends of the earth.
Can I add a caveat to that? If we destroy the Houston Texans, will Cam Newton have a home at the end of the week?
Maybe. I think I don't know, man. The thing about Cam is the stuff that he said, like he made it harder on himself by putting that video out where he talks about how he's better than 32 quarterbacks in the league, by continuing to kind of build up his personality. And like you guys know, and there's this weird national narrative that Cam is like selfish and like isn't a good teammate and like all these ridiculous things that aren't true. Like legitimately just aren't true. Like they're like somehow the national narrative is that Cam is not a good teammate.
They're not even not true. Yeah. They're the farthest thing from the truth.
So it's like, so when he goes out and kind of lives up to those thoughts in a lot of people's minds, I think that doesn't help him. I also think like, and I hate to be this guy, but like the news on Cam's shoulder is out. Like I get it. I've seen all the Twitter threads on how good his arm looks. And like, it looks real good until he has to throw 40 times in a game. And then the next week it doesn't look good. I mean, it is what it is.
That's
like
the last hard truth.
It last year, it wasn't truth. COVID that killed him. It's throwing 56 times against the Seahawks. He was never the same. And he was incredible in that Seahawks game. And then he was terrible for the rest of the season because his shoulder is not healthy. He's got he's got arthritis in his shoulder. It wears down. It is what it is. The guy was a unicorn, was incredible, was and is the best player in Carolina Panthers franchise history, is the Carolina Panthers. And it sucks that this happened to him, that his career had to end the way that he was. It's a travesty what happened to him at the end here in Carolina. It sucks, man.
I know.
Like,
it's not the way that his story deserves to be ending.
Sure.
Right. I just wanted to have one, and not. It doesn't even have to be a playoff run. One run where he doesn't end hurt, and he doesn't end where people just are like a shell. That's a shell.
Someplace that can actually pass protect and give him a little time to throw the football would be nice.
Right. I'd love to see him come in and play like two games and have like a vintage Cam game and then just be like, I'm out. Done. Like George Costanza just walk away from the table week 8. Like be like, yeah, you know what? Houston Texans, I retire. We're 1-7. I just threw for 350 yards and stiff arm somebody into the dirt. I'm out. I'm moving back to Atlanta.
Do you think we were too hard on Teddy Bridgewater?
Yes, I do.
Tell us why.
Sure. Wasn't Teddy Bridgewater's fault that he signed the same day that they released Cam, that they cut Cam Newton.
Right.
It wasn't Teddy Bridgewater's fault that he had to follow the most popular player in the franchise history, play the exact same position. And when he is a completely different player than Cam Newton, obviously, and not as good of a player as Cam Newton. It's not Teddy Bridgewater's fault that they put him
overpaid
in this
him for 3 years. They put him on a 3-year deal. They should have given him a 1-year deal.
Great. Wow. I mean, you would have signed a 3-year deal, right? Like it's more money. Sure. I would have done it.
It's not his fault.
That's not his fault.
Marty's. That's Marty's fault.
We
don't know whose fault it is, but it's too many years.
Matt Rule and Joe Brady. I think it was more of them than it was Marty.
Oh no, I think it was Marty. I'm pretty sure it was Marty.
Me too.
Marty wanted to save his own job, and you can't do that with Will Greer as the quarterback. And so you got to bring in somebody that you think can win now. And then once you sign the guy, like, what else are you going to say if you're the coach? You're going to be like, well, I kind of liked him, but I didn't want him. You're like, no, we wanted him, obviously. I think he got put in an impossible position. He came in and he played like Teddy Bridgewater, and everybody killed him for it. He came in expecting to play with Christian McCaffrey and Russell Okung. Those guys didn't play the entire season. He came in expecting to play with Joe Brady, this wonder kid offensive guru. Joe Brady couldn't put him in the end zone once they were inside the 20. You know, all he did, he threw three guys to 1,000 yards.
Is there anything on Teddy, though?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
When it comes to that, like, is...
Of course. I'm not saying Teddy was great. By any means. But Teddy Bridgewater was the same quarterback that Teddy Bridgewater is in Denver, and they love him. Same quarterback he was in New Orleans, and they loved him. Same quarterback in the Jets with the Vikings. Whatever quarterback came here after Cam was going to be this fate. And they lobbed Teddy Bridgewater up, and the fan base knocked him out of the park. Like, he had no chance. They could have gone 16-0, and people would have been like, well, fuck that guy.
I would say after about three weeks, we were probably a little more high on Teddy Bridgewater, even though it wasn't a great start. But I do get your point.
Check
my question,
down Teddy, bro.
Who,
check down Teddy.
Who is responsible for Teddy Bridgewater being traded this offseason? Is it the fan base, Tepper, or our coaching staff actually believing that he wasn't the answer?
Well, the first person that talked about how they needed a new quarterback was David Tepper, unprompted at the firing of Marty Herney. He unpromptedly brought up that they needed a new quarterback, and it was just like, "What are you doing, man? Like, you okay? All right, cool." And it's like it was like, "Okay, well, Teddy's gone. Like, whatever." And for me, it's like, I get it. I made the mistake of looking over the comment section because I know talking positively about Teddy is not going to endear me to anybody. But I think he was put in a shitty situation. And I think that ultimately, like, I don't think he played his way out of it. But like, I don't think he deserved to be the most hated man in Carolina for a year.
There are plenty of Teddy stands out there, don't worry, don't let the chat. We've brainwashed them in our own way.
And I think that even us on this podcast have come around to giving, and listen, I think we were fair about it before. We were never big believers in Teddy Bridgewater, but we were always open to him changing our minds.
Sure.
Frankly, even though we have more belief in Sam Darnold's physical upside then we did Teddy, it's the same thing.
We still have trepidation.
Like,
he's got to prove it.
This quarterback position, the job has to be won, and it doesn't matter who it is. And we just feel like there were many times where not only did Teddy Bridgewater fail to close the game out when he had the ball in his hands and an opportunity to make some game-winning drives, but, Josh, we also feel like he's shirked a lot of his leadership opportunities here in Carolina. We always talk about that one play where he kind of threw the ball a little bit behind DJ Moore in mm-hmm. the end zone, and he landed on his knee really weird, and it looked like that could have been a bad injury. And then he wanted to say that, oh, well, it was DJ that ran the wrong route, and then he was trying to call and make checks at the line. And
He talked about the plays coming in late. Cam would have said this shit, they would have
They would have murdered him.
Cam wouldn't have done it either. Yeah,
he would have fallen on the sword.
It always felt like Teddy Bridgewater had someone else to put the blame on. I mean, even after he left the team with the whole red zone comment. So I also think that it's not just his play, but it's a lot of the actions made by Teddy Bridgewater that had us and many of our fans in the chat room just like, nah, man, fuck this guy. And yeah, you're right, yeah, too.
Didn't want to like him. I just will openly admit it. I don't want to say I didn't want to like him. I was salty. You know how people got about
when I understand
and the Greg Olson. This was that to me. Like the Cam stuff, it was just so important. He was just so important to us and he still is. Is Matt Rhule? Is he going to be the real deal? Like we want him to be. Like I praise what this coaching staff has done. I said, look, they came in COVID. All I want to see is a team last year that looks competent, that they don't look like they're in over their heads. And to be honest, I saw that from pretty much everybody when it came to the coaching staff. I mean, yes, were there miscues? Were there errors? But it didn't look like there was they were out of sorts. Like they didn't know where the hell they were at times. They got better on defense. You know, we can look, as everybody's told me, Joe Brady is the wonder boy, and I will wait for it to happen, but I'm not negative on it. I'm not down. I've been pleased. Phil Snow's my favorite dude in the world.
Yeah, man.
We're
a big Phil Snow guy in this square right here. Phil Snow.
Even last year is that miss me with that. Oh, this 3-3-5. We didn't have anybody. We're starting all these rookies. God bless. The defense was better at the end of the year than it was at the beginning. So I'm happy with that. Now it's dominant. Is Matt Rhule the real deal? I know that's a hard question. I mean, we want him to be. We're rooting for it.
It's a hard question. Obviously, I mean, I do like that he has a brand and he sticks to it. And he really does believe that making the team, molding the team in his image, and the brand is bigger than the players, essentially, for Matt
Rhule. Do the players like that? Because it seems like they do.
It's a great question.
At this point, it's right there. I mean,
they like it a lot more
rah-rah-ish at this moment.
They like it a lot more at 2-0 than they did at 5-9. I can tell you that. Right. So it's like this kind of attitude, this, you know, be the same team, this 1-0, try to go out the nameless, faceless opponents who wear t-shirts, say the brand. It works well when you're winning, and it doesn't, and it sounds corny and dumb when you're losing. So ultimately, Matt Rhule has won at every single stop. He's done this, you know, he did it at Temple, he did it at Baylor. And so, you know, will it work here in the NFL? I don't know. It does seem like a very college type approach.
It just seems idealistic. It just seems very idealistic, and that's cool. Fair. And yeah. Do you think that lent to this what I think was a very vanilla training camp? And I don't know, so the year that Cam came off the shoulder injury and mm-hmm. he got the first surgery, when was that? I don't even remember if it was 2017, but it was like 18? We would get every snap. Look, it'd be the Shepherd, Russell Shepherd. He's the greatest thing. And we'd see these catches, all of this. It felt like we had a new quarterback. We had all this stuff going on, all these new players, and we didn't really even hear a lot of detail about the training camp. And I think that's the ho-hum, go to work every day, very vanilla component. Did you see, did it feel, did this training camp not feel boring, but did it just it feel very mechanical?
It's interesting that you feel that way. I think that it is. I think that would make Matt Rhule really happy that those guys just go out there and they're just practicing football for 90 minutes and then there's no other news. I think that part of that is, you know, the biggest personality guys on this team are no longer playing quarterback. So, you know, Sam Darnold gets up.
You can only talk to Robbie so much.
Robbie or Dante Jackson or Brian Burns, right? Like those are the three guys that you know are going to be fun and like have some cool, like fun stuff to say. Burns is going to come up in his sunglasses and like Dante's going to talk about how he's
chain.
Yeah.
Did you see
like
that chain.
Yeah. Like that. That's crazy. How you're, I also think, and I like, I don't want to spin this off too much, but I think it's because of the state of where media is today is why you didn't hear more about Carolina Panthers practice because like, you know, there's just not as much media covering the team when it's not that popular, and also, you know, the Observer can't keep people because people don't want to pay up for that sports pass. The Athletic is having problems because people don't want to pay for things, and like it's not an easy game. And so I think that may have something to do with it, too. There just weren't that many people down there covering the team. I mean, I was not down there every day by any means. I had, at that point, I had a 6-week-old daughter. So I was missing out on some practices. But ultimately, like, I think that has something to do with it, too.
Right. All right. We got Houston tomorrow night. We'll go ahead and close this up. What are your thoughts on this game? What does it mean for the Carolina Panthers? Week 3, 2-0. Is this a meaningful game? Matt Rhule wants this to be again. And I like this. Is that that's what the guys are supposed to do? That's what their coaches are supposed to do. And I gave Ron Rivera credit for this for a long time. Is at one point I wanted him to be this angry dude that would like slam the clipboard, like because we sucked in 2012 and 2012. And he wasn't, and Mick Mixon would be like in his arms folded over his ample chest. And we were like, but then I came to appreciate it in some of the tougher times that we ran through where he really seemed to be a super stabilizing factor. Right. I mean, hell, we punted that Saints game we won in the pouring rain. This might be 2013. We punted with like under 2 minutes or like at the 2 minute and we're down. And it's just like very similar to what Matt Rhule did, this punt, not very similar, but that stabilizing factor. And I felt like, and Matt Rhule's been saying this, is every week is just the next opponent. Does this game mean anything for the what's the meaning? Primetime, the only primetime game. Is there any meaning or is it just week 3 against the Texans?
I think he would prefer that it's just week 3 against the Texans, but ultimately, I mean, you play on TV, like these guys know, like they lost their only national TV game last year. Actually, they were on TV twice, right? Because they got blown out by the Packers too. So it's like, I'm sorry, not blown out, but
we're never good in prime time, dude. We're never good in prime time. Just like we're never good in my favorite jerseys, the black on black
and my blue on white ones,
and we're never even
blue on white. Yeah, it's clean. I don't get me wrong. Black on black, I love it. Get those black helmets on.
That's what I'm saying, Josh. When's that going to happen, man?
Tweet at Will Bryan about it. He loves it. He loves to. He wants to hear about it. Panther stat guy. He's the uniform guy. I think that they know, especially the younger guys on this team. Like when you're like JC Horn wants to be incredible. JC Horn wants an interception. Robbie Anderson wants to be good on Thursday night. DJ Moore knows that one of his big problems is that nobody knows who the hell he is around the league, and he's having 1,200 yard season. But it's like he knows that. Like it's not. He's not
right.
He's not.
They're
dumb.
Hungry.
Like,
They're hungry for recognition.
Yeah, so he knows that they know that if they go out there and they blow out the Texans, they have 8 sacks and Burns is returning a fumble for a touchdown, and like they can really put themselves into like prime position to be known. So it's going to be it's going to be it's going to be fun. Like I think that these guys are ready to play in prime time, where I don't think they were ready to do it last year. So I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see what Phil Snow draws up against a rookie quarterback. I think it's going to be super fun. They're as healthy as they're going to be, except for, you know, YGM, but they're so deep at that defensive end position that they can almost afford to lose him.
Put Marquise Haynes in or somebody exactly. like that, or yeah. Tremendous that we don't have more in, you know, is that, that's it. Cody, yeah. Last question, round the horn real quick for you two guys, then we'll get out of here.
So yeah, you had mentioned something a minute ago that I wanted to go back to just because it stuck out and it's been on my mind too. You mentioned that the Panthers do a lot of college style things, and I've been hearing this a lot, and even Drew Brees said it on Sunday Night Football. The Panthers have a really college style defense, and I can't help but feel like it's like a jab. It's like, the Panthers and their college bullshit that they're doing. It's like it almost leads to this idea that, they're doing some cute college shit, but wait until
we'll catch up.
Film on it, and then we're going to figure it out, and then we're going to show you why that shit stays in college and doesn't come to the NFL. Do you feel like there's any sense that this team is running, like, you know, are we doing something that's gimmicky? Are we doing something that's revolutionary? I mean, Phil Snow is like,
or do we just get after that fucking quarterback is what it is.
But Phil Snow is motioning defensive tackles across the line like he would pull an offensive lineman. I mean, he's really doing some really cool, fun, innovative things. Is when people in the media say that the Panthers are running these college style schemes, should Panther fans take that as an insult, or are we on the cutting edge of something?
I don't know. I think it kind of depends on the tone that people use when they describe it as a college. Like, to me, yeah, I mean, they are kind of running a college defense, but who cares? I mean, it's fun, right? Like, it's working, right? And like, last year they were definitely doing with the three safety stuff that he was doing, was like straight, like, no, that didn't happen in the pros, but it was working. And that's what I like about Phil Snow, is that he changes his scheme to based on who the guys are that are on the roster, rather than like, here's my scheme, I run a college style defense, here's what you guys have to run. He did that because they had enough safeties that they could run it. He does it because he has Jeremy Chinn, who can play that linebacker safety hybrid role. He runs all these blitzes because they have Morgan Fox. They play all seven that can play anywhere from like out wide at the nine to like in, I mean, not like right up against the center. Like, this guy is incredibly versatile. That's why they brought these guys in. They also have a ton of talent on defense too. Like, first round pick, yeah. Brian Byrne, first round pick, Derek Brown, first round pick, YGM, second round pick, Dante Jackson, second round pick, JC Horn, what, first round pick, Jeremy Chinn, first round pick, Shaq Thompson, first round pick. Like, these are, they should be good on defense. Sorry, that was a tangent, but I think,
no, great answer.
I think it's like, to me, it's like Pete Carroll ran a college style offense and a college style program until they won the Super Bowl. And then he was running a pro style offense and a pro style team. So it's like Matt Rhule and Phil Snow and these things, they will be thought of as college style until they're winners in the NFL. And then they'll just be the Matt Rhule offense, yeah. Or the, you know, the Matt Rhule style of running a team, you know, rather than that like Belichick idea of like, this is what Belichick does, like, this is what Rhule does. Whether it's going to work, I don't know, but like, hopefully.
CK?
Yeah. What do we need to do to get Cody a media pass?
Jeez. Oh man, that's above my pay grade, man. That's above my pay grade.
Sorry. Damn. We were talking about getting it.
Anyway. I mean, they could, the wheelchair. Come on, like,
yeah, dude, hey, man. It. Hey, I'm good for a feel good story. Hey, man, look at the guy in the wheelchair asking good questions. But that's actually my end, because you think I'm gonna be like this sweet little kid asking questions, but I would ask some legit fucking, hey man, where is
Why aren't you vaccinated, Sam Darnold?
Where is Deontay Brown, and why are you not playing him? Do you hate the Panthers?
What the
fuck, man? Why did he go 9 minutes into a press conference and not ask about the offensive line? That's what I would say. It's like every time is this. It's like, first question, how long till we got to get a damn offensive line in Carolina? How many years? How many years?
Bro, but like, how many times can you ask that question? Like, how many press conferences are going to be like, hey, are you concerned about the offensive line at all? Like, I mean,
all of them.
Maybe until we need Roy Riot to ask it then. No, Roy Riot will get 1,000, 2,000 retweets.
Bro, you know how many times they've been tweeted about their offensive line? David Tepper will go
and bias one.
It's weird, right? Like, that, like, it almost seems like they just ignored the offensive line this offseason, which is like, whatever. You can't judge based on Herney. Herney tried. He was just bad at it.
He was terrible,
very bad.
He staked his job on Greg Little. I mean, he did. And then
Will Greer didn't help at all. Either.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't trade up for Greer. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah.
Man, poor David Gettleman. Man, remember when we thought that David Gettleman was
Gettleman, remember? Gettleman.
God, I had a president vote for Gettleman president sticker on Twitter. And like, it was just that when we got the Turner draft, like, and he just smoked it. And then after the 2015 year when they regraded everybody, boy, he really seemed, man, how the wind changes in just a couple of years.
Your GM looks really good when you go 15-1. Like the next offseason, you could do anything you want. You could be like, yeah, I'm going to take this guard out of East Tennessee State. And you're like, I never had heard of him. But like, if Gettleman says it, like, guys, very good.
Coney Ealy was like one play, like a win away from being the Super Bowl MVP. And he's probably not even in the league anymore. My gosh. All right. Yeah. Look, is that we follow, first of all, every time we go to a game, we check out the Roaring Riot tailgate. We follow the Riot Report and your work. We listen to the press conferences. Your voice is recognizable. Your work is recognizable. And y'all's impact on this culture has been recognizable. How can we help you change the culture and help Roaring Riot continue to grow and the Riot Report?
Easy peasy. Easiest way to do it is to watch Carolina Panthers games with your friends. Go, if you don't live in Charlotte, even if you do live in Charlotte, go to a bar, go to a restaurant. Roaring Riot has great watch parties, obviously, for the home game. Try and go to the game. I get it. It's not easy. It's expensive. Like, if you can't, like, last week, the get-in price was like $30. Like, that's a lot.
That's pretty good.
Like, I mean, for $30, like, you could have been there
to the Roaring Riot tailgate.
No,
or
to the game.
Oh, that's not that much.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's going to be more expensive if they come back 3-0. But I'm saying, like,
true.
And obviously, if you want to come out to the Roaring Riot tailgate, that's great. But go out to your own tailgate. Like, the idea of change the culture is not like make sure you come to Roaring Riot events. It's trying to be a better Carolina Panthers fan. And guys that are in this chat, you guys, like, this is not the problem. It's the people that are, you know, that are like, well, you know what? I was going to go to the game, but then a Cowboys fan offered me $100. So I'm not going to go because I'm going to sell my tickets to him because it's like, man, I can just watch it at home. And it's like, That's not how you build a home field advantage. That's not how you build a home team. That's not how you change the culture, because ultimately the Carolina Panthers fans, Carolina Panthers, they don't have a ton of culture. That's why we reacted so strong. That's why I personally reacted so strong to the keep pounding thing, because there's really only one thing that defines the Carolina Panthers in terms of fans and culture. And it's the words keep pounding. And it's, you know, to me, it's like that has to be a part of the Carolina Panthers. We need to build more traditions, not take traditions away. And so that is something that we can all do by just interacting and being friends and watching Carolina Panthers games with your friends.
Well, the yes,
Chad Morales,
being,
we will be down there. We will be down there December 31st.
I hope that's
New
one
Year
of the games you're going to. I hope that New
Year's,
Orleans is
New
one
Year's
of
Eve
the
in New
one
Orleans,
you,
right? I mean, who doesn't like that? So I'll
give
you a great
baby, a babysitter.
I'll give
you
a great example.
Your wife.
just real quick, I'll give you a great example. The New Orleans, every year in New Orleans, the past 3 years, the Roaring Riot goes down there. They have an awesome tailgate, a party on Friday and Saturday night. Saturday night, they have a second line, a brass band lead these Carolina Panthers fans through the streets of the French Quarter. So it's like you're walking or you're dancing through the streets of the French Quarter with like hundreds of other Panthers fans. Saints fans are like booing you from the balcony. The band starts playing when the Saints go marching in and you boo them down until they stop playing it. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that is like, that's the kind of stuff that fucking rules, man. Like I got goosebumps just thinking about it. Like that's like family. That's how you create traditions and a culture and a fan base. So anytime that you can, come out and hang out.
Where can they find your work at?
Yeah, you can check out theriotreport.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Klein Rules. You can find me in Dallas next weekend. Just excited to be there, man. In the deep Elm district on Friday. Go to roaringriot.com to check out where we'll be. You can become a member there. You can check out the tailgate and come on trips, man. Away games are going to be incredible.
They're fun. We went to Jacksonville one time. It's great.
The Roaring Riot does a whole thing. Like you have packages for these away games that, you know,
it's all set up for you. You just go and have fun and then go to the game with like five, like, well, at one point we went, it was like 250 people that 1 year that we went. I'm sure it's still like that.
Yeah. It's about 200 in Dallas next week.
It's like if your wife was a fan of the team you love more than you are, and she super pre-planned a weekend for you. So you get like the itinerary. You just get to show up and have a great time.
I consider Zach my work wife, so that makes sense. That's
tell him he is a great planner. Look, you've been so generous with your time tonight, Josh. I know you got a little one to watch after. I hope we can catch up with you another time throughout the season.
Awesome. Definitely, guys. My pleasure. Thank y'all so much for having me. We'll see you tomorrow night. Maybe I'll hop in the chat for the post game show.
We'd love to hear it.
If Darnold throws three interceptions, I'm in that chat. That's a promise to you.
There you go. Don't worry. If we win by 35, I'm gonna be there. That's right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, man. We appreciate it. All right. That's Josh Klein, the Riot Report. The news outlet for the Roaring Riot, the fan club. And the thing that resonates so much with us is that we have the same mission. And the mission is this, is that this podcast isn't about us. It's about just growing this Panther fan culture together, right? As we are just fans here doing what we love to do. And that is talk about this team incessantly to the point where we argue over who's going to make the practice squad. No reasonable people do that. But that's what we don't want you to be. Be unreasonable with us. Be a part of the C3 Panthers podcast. It's Tuesday nights at 9, Wednesday nights, sometimes 8:30, 9, depending on how the guests line up. So it's, we're going to get these beat. We're going to do the Wednesday beat report. We've got the Friday free-for-all. Mm-hmm. We've got the Madden simulations, which have been incredibly popular. And tomorrow night, guys, the Panthers head to Houston to blow them fools out of the water. I know people have been upset with my confidence, my, what do you call it? I don't know what it is. Is it like it's just super kind of like, I just feel so good. Feel so good. And I'm not trying to hide it. I'm not trying to be crippled by fear in this moment. I am going to be pushed through with confidence, my friend. We're going to beat those motherfuckers down. So tomorrow night, we got the show 252-228-5098. Cody Lashney, how can they follow your work on Twitter, wherever you're at?
Yeah, man. Find me on Twitter at Cody Lack, CodyLac. There is a brand new set of comments on drafttech.com where I write for the Carolina Panthers. You can check that out. And Tony Dunn, how about yesterday there was a show? Tonight we had an interview show. Tomorrow we're going to have the post game show. And then the Friday free-for-all. So, man, you're getting C3 content all the rest of this week, man. We love all of our fans in the chat. And, yeah, man, we're trying to build Panther Nation. We're all just a bunch of diehard Carolina Panther fans wanting to share this love that we have for the team with one another, man. That's why we do it. Shout out to everybody who joined us in the chat. Tony, that's all for me, man.
I have one thing I got to show you real quick.
Yeah, show me.
From because of your ice up pick last night, which was Conor McGregor throwing the ball right out at the Cubs game.
Yep.
Check this out. Oh, gosh. This is him. Can you hear this?
Is back, and so are the Cubs. Let's go, Chicago Cubs.
You hear that?
Yeah.
I'm here with Mateo, here with Kieran. We're going to sing the song. Let's go. One, two, three. Take me out to the ball game.
Oh, Lord.
Take me out the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back.
Oh, cringe.
The Cubbies, if they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Let's go, Chicago!
Ah, so cringe, dude. You can tell he doesn't know the words.
No one knows the words, but I mean, people that actually are fans, but none of the guests that come in. But I was just, when I heard it, I was like, what's worse, the throw or the song? The throw or the song?
They were both very fucking bad.
Oh, man. If you want to hear the best version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, seventh inning stretch, go check out Ozzy Osbourne. It is the most phenomenal thing you will ever hear. All right, that's the show. Oh, it's like he's like, and you know, it's wrong to make fun. I love Ozzy. One of the best concerts I ever saw was Black Sabbath on the reunion tour. All the original members, and Ozzy was lucid, right? Like he was present. Wow. He was present. This was in 2000. It was amazing. I think 99, 2000, whatever, somewhere in it. But, you know, you don't want to make fun of someone with Parkinson's. You know, they've been trotting him out to make money for a long time, homie. I mean, he felt like, it was like he fell asleep. He got some, yeah, I think so, man.
I thought it was just years of doing a whole lot of cocaine.
I think it's both. I think it's both.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah. All right. That's the show. Cody, thanks for hanging out this long. The chat room has been tremendous. Over 120 people all the time.
Dude,
what type is that? Y'all Panther fans are awesome.
C3 Nation is legit, man. We keep on getting a whole bunch of people that have that are joining us for the first time, and they're, you know, fans are loving the content. So if you guys like what we're doing, we're gonna keep doing it for you, man. Hit the like button.
Take us out of here.
Peace and love, Panther Nation.
Keep pounding.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.